Now, we're focusing on insects in today's Happy Home and Garden segment. With me on the line is Professor Clark Scholtz, who is one of the authors of the book Pollinators, Predators and Parasites, recently released by Stroke Nature. Professor is Emeritus Professor of Entomology at the University of Pretoria. He's co-authored numerous papers and books on the subject of the insects of Southern Africa. And this latest one is co-written with Jenny Scholtz and Henny de Klerk, really delving deep into not just the array of insects to be found in Southern Africa, but the absolutely crucial role that they play in our ecosystems. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Professor Scholtz to the show today. Lovely to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Pippa. Thank you very much.
Clark, a lot of people think of insects in the garden primarily from a pest perspective. They phone the show when we have a gardening expert to say, what do I do about this bug that's eating this plant that's, you know, burrowing in this tree? But in fact, they are absolutely crucial to the functioning of the natural world, aren't they? Can you explain in just broad brush strokes why it's so important that we not allow insects to be wiped out?
Well, I hope I can convince at least, well, the people who've already been put off and switched off their radios, it's not going to help them much, but they're probably the ones who should be listening. Various people have called insects the small things that make ecosystems function, you know, and I think just of some of the examples, the simple examples are that, for instance, 70% of our native plants are pollinated by insects. And, you know, for instance, the Cape, the dicer. I mean, there would be no dicers. There would be no emblem for the Western Province rugby team. There would be no proteas. There would be no emblem for the protea cricket teams and netball teams. Without the insects, those just wouldn't be there. And, of course, I don't want to go into, you know, the problem that people encounter or the perceived problems that people encounter in their gardens, that, you know, the pests are such a tiny fraction of the numbers of insects that are extremely beneficial. Do you want some more examples? I mean,
I think it's worth mentioning that beyond pollination, they play a role in our, the health of our soils, in the recycling of nutrients, and then, of course, in the sort of the food chain as well.
Oh, indeed. Recycling nutrients, for instance. I mean, one of my favorite statistics is, it's great for a cocktail party when there's a lull in the conversation, is that we have 15 million odd cattle in South Africa, and they produce 500,000 tons. I mean, just say that slowly, 500,000 tons of dung per day. There are 10,000 elephants in the Kruger Park that produce 150 kilograms of dung each per day, and 30,000 buffalo that produce 20 kilograms of dung per day. So, I mean, and we have politicians. I mean, so we would be neck deep in trouble if it weren't for dung beetles. And, you know, the fly problems and the parasite problems and all the rest of them that, you know, that we don't have to contend with would be there. You know, I don't know how many of your listeners know about the Australian salute, you know, where Australians trying to chase flies away from their faces the whole time. Those flies breed in cattle dung, and the long and the short of it is that the dung beetles that evolved on the continent of Australia evolved with kangaroos, which produce small, hard, dry pellets, a bit like sheep. And when cattle were introduced by Europeans in 1788, they produced a massive problem. And to the extent that the Australian government imported dung beetles from mainly South Africa, but from other parts of the world, to biologically control the dung.
Good heavens. Okay, that's a fascinating, the lesser spotted politician dung bearer aside, is a fascinating thought that they're so necessary that other countries import them to deal with their problems. Clark, I mean, obviously somebody comes in or something happens to wipe out a large percentage of a particular population, by implication entire ecosystems can be thrown out of balance.
Oh, indeed. One needs to think of ecosystems as systems, precisely, you know, as the word implies. But, many of the, another example that, you know, I'm sure that a lot of your listeners will be able to identify with is recently, the prolonged drought we've had in various parts of the country. In the Kalahari, aardvark started dying out. Mm-hmm. And there was concern for, you know, of course, for, I mean, this is one of Africa's iconic mammals, you know, why were they dying out? And, you know, scientists looked back into the food chain and found that the termites and ants, which are virtually the only food of aardvark, had crashed. The populations had crashed because of the drought, and the aardvark were basically starving to death. And that has a cascade effect because the aardvark are ecosystem engineers, as are many insects. They dig big burrows, which are secondarily inhabited by all kinds of other animals, from small beetles, lizards, snakes, all the way up to battiate foxes and various others. So you have just the fact that the termites and ants populations crashed. You have a whole ecosystem cascade. And virtually every example we can think of in our natural ecosystems is controlled or driven or under the regulation of some group of insects.
Clark, in the foreword to your book, it is mentioned that as many as a third of the world's insect species are in trouble, that some are approaching the point where they could already be threatened with extinction, and that the potential environmental consequences, if that deterioration continues, could be absolutely catastrophic. I think a lot of people are aware of, for example, they know that bees have been in trouble for a long time. They might have heard of an insect here, an insect there, but I was quite staggered to read that figure of as many as a third of all insects on the planet. Do you want to elaborate a little bit? I mean, I'm sure it is in part at least due to mankind's consumption of resources and of space and of land and encroachment on territory. But do you want to tell us a little bit more about what has led to that position of so many insect species being in trouble?
Yes, certainly. There have only been two really thorough studies that have lasted over 20 years. So, you know, we need to bear that in mind. The one was in Germany and the other was in Costa Rica. And both of those have found that the native, normal, everyday moths and butterflies and crickets and beetles have crashed by between about 60 and about 80%. And as a consequence, for instance, in Costa Rica, they've actually followed the next trophic levels, the next feeding levels, and they found that birds that are entirely dependent on insects, several species of lizards and many species of frogs, which worldwide are threatened by various reasons. I don't think the frog people know precisely why. But there are many reasons. And in Costa Rica, that's another one. So there they've had 70 or 80% of the insects that have crashed and 70 or 80% of the reptiles and frogs and birds that are dependent on those insects have also crashed. So, we're likely to go the same way. We don't have those kind of long-term statistics here, but I'm sure many of your listeners will remember driving through, a rural area in summer, in the good old days, and at the other end having to clean your windscreen and clean your headlights of dead insects. That just doesn't happen anymore. You can drive from here to there without much of a problem. And so the anecdotal evidence is essentially that we're heading the same way, and sooner or later we're going to be confronted by it. We don't really know, what the precipice is, but sooner or later we're going to hit it.
Is there anything that we can do as ordinary residents, perhaps with gardens, that can make a difference, that can be part of reversing those trends?
Oh, certainly. I would encourage people to use pesticides as little as possible. Of course, because of the cascade effect. You kill the caterpillars, the birds that eat the caterpillars, and so on. But a major killer, and something that I have an absolute abhorrence of, are these bug zappers, these electrocutors, these electrical apparatuses that people hang on their porches, they drink a toast every time it goes bzzzt, when an insect flies into them. Do you know the things I mean?
I do, yes.
Those are completely non-selective, and most people put them up to so-called control mosquitoes, and in fact all they're doing is they're killing a lot of the pollinators, things like praying mantises and even bigger animals like geckos and that sort of thing. They try to get bats in some areas, have tried to glean insects off these things and got themselves fried. Okay. And they're completely unselective, and you know, and they don't do, you know, what they marketed as. So I would certainly discontinue using anything like that. And then simple things, put yellow light bulbs. They don't stop attracting all insects, but yellow light bulbs will attract fewer insects, and they'll be less of a nuisance to people on verandas and in the house and that sort of thing. And generally, you know, I think we need to just, if you want an insect-friendly, a butterfly-friendly, a bee-friendly garden, then it's, you know, the principles are the same as the farmers. You know, you have to manage your little ecosystem that you live in, just like the farmer has to manage his ecosystem.
You mentioned the mosquitoes. I believe there is a voice note from one of our listeners asking a question about mosquitoes. Let's take a listen to that.
Hello, Pippa. Please ask your guest, what is the ecological purpose of a mosquito being an insect? Would our world come to an end if mosquitoes cease to exist? Keeping me awake 2 o'clock in the morning. Yaku from Barrow.
It's a great question, Yaku. Thank you. And it's one that comes up, Clark, every time we talk about malaria, for example. Somebody will say, just get rid of the mosquitoes, find a way to get rid of the mosquitoes and the problem will be solved. I bet it's not that simple.
No, well, besides just the mosquitoes, we'll also get rid of the bats and the birds and various other animals that control the mosquitoes. And, you know, that once again, we'd have a cascade effect. You know, I realize that there's you know, this perception. I mean, malaria is a big disease, big and very serious disease in Africa. But, you know, in terms of keeping ecosystems fairly pristine, an example I can mention, and mosquitoes really come into that category because, you know, they've kept many parts of Africa relatively people-free. So, you know, of course, those areas are more pristine than many others. But, you know, the control of tsetse flies in, you know, 50 years ago or so in KwaZulu-Natal caused massive ecological damage, so much so that some of the orchids, for instance, were wiped out because their pollinators were wiped out. So, you know, just because they were trying to control the tsetse flies. And the same in Botswana.
I heard the same when I visited the Okavango, that the knock-on impact was catastrophic.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I want to say. So, you know, it's... you know, we have a few insects that are of nuisance value. You know, what I recommend is that we just do the best we can, you know, to avoid the nuisance value. Just like farmers have to control them in some way, you know, we need the farmers, we need the crops. We can't just suddenly stop doing everything that makes the world go around, mm-hmm. but we can certainly lessen our own importance. And, you know, the best thing to do is try to live as best we can with nature, rather than to confront it the whole time and consider it as, you know, as an evil.
Just for those who've joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line with us is Clark Schultz, who is Emeritus Professor of Entomology at the University of Pretoria and one of the co-authors of a new book called Pollinators, Predators and Parasites. It is a really detailed look at the insects of Southern Africa, beautifully illustrated. I mean, this must have taken years of research and photography and in-depth work to compile, Clark. So congratulations to you and the fellow authors. You've broken it down by bio. So it's a very in-depth look at the different regions of Southern Africa. There's an entire chapter on our own fynbos area and the insects you find here. There's also mention, Clark, of the species which aren't meant to be here. And somebody's asking about one of them on our WhatsApp line, the Argentinian ants. We have a huge problem with them. How do we get rid of them is the question.
You know, this is a field I don't like to get into, you know. Being an entomologist, that's usually the first thing people ask me. You're an entomologist. What can I do about the cockroaches in my kitchen and the ants in my garden and this sort of thing? You know, the best is just if, I mean, it's an invasive. We have no biological means of controlling them. So, you know, if people are really desperate, they have to resort to, you know, the recommended pesticides and that sort of thing. You know, there is just no other way out. Unfortunately, with things like ants, it's very hard to control them because, you know, their nests are not clearly marked. Of course, they're not well exposed. So the Argentine ant, I'm afraid, is with us, and it has very serious, you know, besides its nuisance value to all of us, very serious consequences for the fynbos plants.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have time for me, if I have time, just to mention it briefly.
Very, very quickly, please do.
Okay, well, the Argentine ant has displaced a lot of our native ants in the fynbos, and many of the fynbos plants have seeds that are highly attractive to ants that have evolved with them. They have a little fruiting body on them that the ants eat. So the ants carry the seeds into their nests, eat this little body off, and then the seeds are protected from rodents and from fire, and they're buried, and it's warm and it's moist, and the nutritious environment. So the ants, our native ants, are actually planting and caring for our fynbos plants. The Argentine ant doesn't do it. It just it either ignores the seed but besides ignoring the seed, they're displacing our native ants.
Okay, thanks for that explanation. That's very interesting. One last listener question to squeeze in. Somebody asking about the well-being of the Brent and Blue butterflies in the Knysna area after the fires. It's a sad question to end on because, Prof, I think there's a lot of question as to whether the species has survived that devastating fire, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm afraid the news, as far as we know, is bad. And, you know, it's a bad time for Cape Townians to be asking that question too, because they've just been through it themselves. But yes, as far as we know, the 1918 fires, the so-called Knysna fires, wiped out the Brent and Blue butterfly.
Oh,
so as far as we know, it's extinct. And the irony is that it was discovered 119 years after it was first found. It was rediscovered.
Yeah.
And it's only been protected. It's had, you know, its own tiny little reserve the size of 3 rugby fields for the last 20-odd years or so, and now it's gone belly up.
Oh, what a sad note on which to finish the interview. But Clark, I'd love to direct our listeners to your book if they're intrigued by the kind of things we've been discussing and the stories, the detail of the role that these insects play in our ecosystems. The book is going to be devoured by those who are interested. Is it widely available in all major bookstores as we speak?
Yes, it is. It is already. And also, you know, there have been all kinds of press releases and special offers and all the rest of it. So if they hunt around, I'm afraid hopefully none yet in secondhand bookshops, but they should be. They're certainly freely available.
Professor Clark Schultz, thank you so much for joining us. I don't think they're going to be secondhand for a while because people are going to devour these books and read them in depth before they pass them on to anyone else. But just to mention that it is available in an e-book version as well, which does help. It's called Pollinators, Predators and Parasites, written by Professor Clark Schultz, who you've just heard, as well as Jenny Schultz and Henny de Klerk, published by Strake Nature. It's a beautiful big hardcover valued at 590 Rand and available, as I mentioned, in an ebook version as well.